You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the weekend, and thanks for kicking it off with me here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Friday, September 13th, we are literally just 2 weeks away from the 2019-2020 Houston Rockets basketball season officially being underway. Media day set for Friday the 27th. The opening of training camp is that following weekend. And then that Monday, September 30th, the Rockets begin preseason play at home against the Shanghai Sharks. So we have almost made it to the end of this dead period on the NBA calendar. You can definitely see light at the end of the tunnel. And even though we're still a couple of weeks away from the official opening of the 2019-2020 season, at least in terms of basketball activities, it's certainly not that we're devoid of news in the meantime. Certainly we're seeing the Rockets working out together on the court. James Harden, Russell Westbrook in New York. Harden showing off his new move, the one-legged three, which apparently is becoming more and more of an option. I thought at first it was a novelty thing, but the more you see it throughout the offseason, the more it's difficult to think, especially seeing him do it against NBA players. It's hard not to think that it's at least an option that he's considering. We'll see how efficient it is in the preseason and during real games. But at least for now, it's hard to argue that it's not at least being considered. There's also the matter off the court of the Nene contract, the terms that we think we know, not officially on the NBA transaction wire as I'm recording this at about 4 p.m. Friday afternoon. This is September 13th. But assuming it goes as reported, the bonus structure of Nene's contract, he is, as we've expected, likely to get the minimum. That's going to be the actual payout, but a very creative bonus structure could have him worth as much as $10 million as outgoing salary in trades. That potentially could be very critical for the Rockets by mid-January when he would be eligible to be dealt. So there's that to talk about off the floor. There's a lot of stuff that's been going on as far as the basketball is concerned. So to go through what we've learned this week, I've got a new guest that's joining the show today. His name is Jackson Gatlin. He's a producer for 790, again, the Rockets flagship. He's also a Rockets blogger and podcaster himself over the years, a really sharp guy, and I've been wanting to get him into our rotating panel of guest analysts here at Locked On Rockets for some time. Now that we've had a busy few days, at least as far as the offseason goes in terms of news, I figured this was a great time to bring him into the fold here at Locked On Rockets and sit down for a roundtable chat. Jackson, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Ben. Glad to be on the show finally.
Absolutely. Glad to have you. And I'll start you with an easy one. I think the biggest story for the Rockets this week have been the reported terms of the new Nene contract, assuming it goes through. Now, the Rockets have sent out a press release, but it is not on the official NBA transaction wire just yet. I assume, given the unique terms, they're looking to make sure that all the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed. This is something that Adam Silver and his legal team, I suspect, will be looking at very closely, because certainly it could set a precedent, at least until there's a new collective bargaining agreement. Anyway, Jackson, I'll start you with this. How much more do you know about the NBA collective bargaining agreement only because Daryl Morey is the GM of the basketball team that you follow?
I mean, when Morey's your general manager, you basically have to know about the CBA. There are times, probably at least once a week, especially during the offseason, when I find myself just digging through the CBA FAQ, trying to refamiliarize myself with terms. Obviously, Beamathug on Twitter, a huge follower, you know, he's always great when it comes to explaining things and really diving into the kind of the minutia of some things that might go over the heads of people that don't spend every waking moment analyzing the CBA. But at this point, I'm fully convinced Daryl Morey, when he was a child, said his goal was to grow up, be a general manager, and find every single way to, I guess, construct loopholes in the CBA of the NBA, because this is, what, the third or fourth time that he's gone out and done something nobody thought was possible in order to further down the line facilitate the Rockets' chances and make them, you know, put them in a better position to improve the team.
What's funny is that it's at least the second time with Nene specifically, because if you remember a couple of summers ago, the original deal he agreed to with the Rockets got voided because it ended up conflicting with the age 38 rule, which is why
Of
he had a
course.
player option for this summer. So Nene in particular, for some reason, ends up getting the Rockets into some intriguing CBA situation. So let's assume, at least for now, that this goes through as reported, in which because the Rockets have a clear incentive not to give him all of those bonuses. Nay, at his age, his production, you don't want to pay him more than $2.5 billion, the league minimum. But because they use bird rights, with Nay having been in Houston the last 3 years, obviously they can go beyond that. That's how they're able to give him bonuses, playing time, and team wins up to $10 million. That's how much he'll count as outgoing salary in trades. How big of a deal is it for the Rockets to have this ultimately go through? Because as I see it, this is a pretty intriguing trade chip moving forward. If you can have $10 million in filler salary, this is exactly what Rockets Twitter in particular has been so fearful of all summer after they turned Brandon Knight into Iman Shumpert. And to this point, there's been no reported traction between the Rockets and Shumpert on a deal. This is that mid-tier filler. So as far as I see it, this deal getting 100% confirmed by the NBA, which it's not as we're recording this about 4 p.m. on Friday. Is this a big a deal to you as it is to me?
I mean, it's obviously huge, especially, and you touched on it in your last pod, with the extension for Eric Gordon. He is now off the table as your mid-tier salary trade piece. And it's hard to view Clint Capella as a mid-tier salary trade piece because he's not, that's not, if you're looking at him simply from an asset standpoint, that's not what he is. He is a young, appealing, up-and-coming center, or not even up-and-coming center, but, you know, an established center who is, you know, could center of a very valuable trade package down the line. So really, if this Nene deal does go through, then yeah, that provides you that mid-tier, you know, $10 to $12 million salary filler that you would need to pursue another candidate like Andre Iguodala, who's been one of the names that's been attached to Houston in recent months.
Certainly, and the Rockets being an above-the-cap team, it's such a big deal because they have to send out as much salary as they take in. So for more salary cap novices out there, that's why the Rockets need this filler salary. Anyway, as far as what the Rockets can do and why this is so advantageous, there is one drawback. Because the Rockets are considering these bonuses likely, they have to be considered likely in order to have it count as $10 million in outgoing salary. You can't, for example, set just a completely unrealistic bonus like, oh, if Nene averages 25 points per game, and then have it count that much in trades, because obviously there's no reason to believe he'll come anywhere near that. The bonuses have to be considered likely, and of course it's tied to what Nene did this past season, but now that Nene is the third team center rather than the second team, you brought in Tyson Chandler in the offseason, he's unlikely to hit those numbers. So because of that, the Rockets feel pretty comfortable, although the true genius of this, by tying in team wins as well, even if the Rockets do need to play Nene because there are injuries or he's playing well, then really, as long as you deal him at the deadline to a team that's not going to win 52-plus games, and that's going to be most of the NBA, then there's a parachute out even if you do need to play him. That's the true genius of this as I see it. The one downside is that because the $10 million is considered likely based on the fact that he did it last year, you are going through what's considered the hard cap. The $139 million apron level, that's the hard cap in NBA lingo. And if you use your non-taxpayer mid-level exception, you're hard capped. And so with the Rockets at least projected, and the $10 million figure, if it counts that much in outgoing trade salary, it also counts in your projections. If you're projected to be above the hard cap line, you can't use your non-taxpayer mid-level exception. So whatever would be left of that, about $5.5 million. I've speculated you could use that on Andre Iguodala to help facilitate a buyout or other potential buyouts. Now, that's not really an option, but the reason I see this is so advantageous, well, with Nene, you would have to, you know, the $10 million that he'd be at, you could bring in, assuming it goes through, up to $12 million. You do have to wait until January 15th to trade him because he was signed in the offseason, just 1 year guaranteed. But the reason I see this is so much more friendly, you could still go after Andre Iguodala if you wanted by trade. It does look like Memphis is prepared to go into the season with him, but it also gives you a lot of other options as well. The reason I say that, you can combine that $10 million Nene figure with, say, a Clint Capella, and even go after Kevin Love. So it's like, it just gives you more options, Jackson. That's how I see it, is that, you know, the $10 million NA contract, sure, you can still use it to go after a role player, an Andre Iguodala, a Robert Covington, if you use draft picks as well, something like that, something marginal. But it also theoretically gives you the option, you can aggregate it with the Clint Capella and even get in room for, say, a Kevin Love, who we know was college teammates with Russell Westbrook. We saw them on Instagram hanging out earlier this week. That's why, to me, this is such a big deal. You know, the mid-level exception, if they, the non-taxpayer, that would have been nice. But this, it gives you most of the upside of that. You do have to wait until January 15th. But beyond that, you also get the option to potentially even go after a bigger name because, unlike the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, you can aggregate it. That's what jumps out to me. And I know you've been at least intrigued by the Kevin Love hypothetical. Talk about where this might play into that.
I mean, you already kind of covered those bases there, you know, being able to aggregate Nene's, you know, likely $10 million salary as far as an outgoing trade is concerned, along with somebody like Clint Capella for potentially a Kevin Love deal. That is something that's now on the table, and that's something that Morey is notorious for. You know, he likes keeping his options open, and he is all about flexibility within the roster. I mean, we've seen it time and time again from the contracts that he gave to Jeremy Lin and Omer Asik back in the day. We've also seen it with the way that he orchestrated the Chris Paul trade, grabbing, you know, sending out the cash considerations, grabbing the non-guaranteed deals, and being able to swing, you know, what wound up being such a miraculous maneuvering of the CBA. And hopefully, as long as it gets approved by the league office, we'll see it one more time with the structure of this Nene contract. And while it's fun to speculate on who they might swing Nene for further down the line, whether it is an Andre Iguodala type or whether they feel that by the midseason mark they need that extra bump and they feel that Kevin Love is potentially on the table as a target and would improve their chances over, you know, Clint Capella, who's been here for a number of years now, then it all, you know, it's exciting to think about, but all it boils back down to is the fact that they have the option there and they have the flexibility available to them. And again, that's been Morey's game for so long.
This is Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. On today, Friday, September 13th, just a couple of weeks away from Media Day and the official opening of the 2019-2020 Houston Rockets season, we're joined by Jackson Gatlin, producer at Sports Talk 790, flagship station of the team. You can follow him on Twitter at JTGatlin790. Jackson, we spent the first segment largely discussing the implications of the Nene contract, the unique bonus structure that could make him, even though he's only likely to make the minimum, could make him worth up to $10 million in outgoing salary in trades, basically a human trade exception. One thing I do want to touch on very briefly before we move on to other topics, most notably a podcast interview that Mike D'Antoni gave yesterday with Craig Ackerman. This will be a podcast about a podcast. But as far as Nene, wrapping up, I've seen a lot of folks on Twitter saying, what happens with Iman Shumpert? The Rockets still have his bird rights, which is the same way they gave this structure to Nene. Would they do the same thing with Shumpert? I think the Rockets would like to. However, I just think he has much less incentive to accept. Because Nene, giving up that level of control, it makes it more likely that he gets dealt in January. There could be an incentive in some situations not to play him. With Nene at 37 years old, I think he's happy to basically be with the Rockets for over half of the calendar year and see what happens once January and February and the trade deadline gets here. With Shumpert at 29, look, he may still have another decade in the NBA. He's trying to position himself moving forward to stay in the league, and considering that the overwhelming likely scenario, even though there are these theoretical bonuses, no one would want you to hit them, you'd basically be a human trade exception, I could see Shumpert saying, you know what, even though there's these bonuses, look, you're only going to get the minimum in most scenarios, so why wouldn't I just take a minimum somewhere else where there's a more clear pathway to minutes and I don't give up my control because the GM's going to be trying, no doubt, to trade me in January. So that's kind of how I read this situation. I would love it for the Rockets' purposes if Shumpert would do the same thing in terms of giving them even more options, another human trade exception, assuming it's allowed by the league. But personally, I'm just skeptical that he has the incentive to do it. What's your read on that?
Well, Ben, and I think that a lot of times with media members, sometimes media members try to too much get inside of a player's head and really say, oh, well, this player's going to do this or they're going to do that. You know, they feel this way. And really, at the end of the day, we have no idea how Shumpert feels. Sure. We have no idea if he just wants to secure, you know, another payday of just a minimum salary. He obviously hasn't been signed by any other teams yet. So he's kind of at this point where, yeah, maybe he, you know, doesn't get the playing time that he wants. Maybe it's not specifically the role that he would want on this Rockets team, being a human trade exception. But at the end of the day, it's still a payday for him.
True.
So if he's not going to make that money elsewhere, like I said, I try not to put myself in the player's shoes mentally, trying to see what their decisions would be. But, you know, if it's an opportunity to make another paycheck, if he's not going to make it elsewhere, I don't see why he wouldn't opt for it. Part of me thinks that the reason that the discussions with his contract haven't come out yet, there hasn't been any news surrounding it, is because Morey kind of had this in the back of his mind.
Yeah.
Once it became an option with the Nay, he probably started looking at it and said, well, we could probably do the same thing with Iman Shumpert and then have two walking, breathing trade exceptions ready to go at the deadline.
I think that's a good point. And the one thing that we can agree on is that the longer it's quiet with Iman Shumpert, the more you have to hope, and there's more reason to hope, maybe he doesn't have that much outside interest around the league in terms of clearly better situations in which he signs for the minimum and clearly has a role. That's the hope. I think certainly he would love a better opportunity in terms of a path to minutes than what Houston has at the moment. But look, we're in September, so you're right. It could be, especially if things stay quiet, that once you get closer to the training camp, even if he knows he's not likely to play that much and could get dealt, look, it is a paycheck, and at the end of the day, especially if it's quiet, that might be enough. We'll have to keep our fingers crossed. Anyway, let's transition to Mike D'Antoni, his podcast, Rockets Cast Live, with Craig Ackerman. The team dropped it late Thursday afternoon. What are the more intriguing revelations? There were a lot of fairly predictable things. He said the Rockets' emphasis this year would be on defensive rebounding and pace. That goes without saying. Rebounding's what dropped off a ton from their 65 win year 2 years ago to the 53 win year this past year, especially on the defensive end. Pace, of course, with Russell Westbrook, you want to play faster. If you play the slowdown style that you did with Chris Paul with Russell Westbrook, that's probably not going to be playing to his strengths. What's interesting, the other component of it, the rebounding, of course, Russell Westbrook relative to Chris Paul will help your rebounding some, but the first thing that D'Antoni pointed to in his interview when talking about what changed from 2 years ago to last year was the absence of Trevor Ariza, specifically the height relative to Eric Gordon, who's not that much of a leaper. He's a poor rebounder. Yet later in the same interview, Craig Ackerman asked D'Antoni about his projected starters, and he said that Eric Gordon was his starter. We know a year ago they started Eric Gordon at the three, and he's the more veteran presence. He's more proven. We know Daniel House, who's larger at 6'7", to Gordon's 6'4". He didn't play as well, House, that is, in the playoffs, so perhaps they want him to earn it. But when you actually listen to D'Antoni's response, he clearly hedged. I think it's one of those situations where he said that Gordon's the starter now, and that's the spot that he had towards the end of last season, but he at least indicated some openness to, depending on how this looks in training camp, preseason, early in the year, to changing. So I guess I want to get your take on Gordon versus House, where you fall in this debate, because clearly the Rockets want to get better with their defensive rebounding. Russell Westbrook will help that some, but number one, is that enough? And then secondly, you know, I'm sure Westbrook will benefit from Gordon shooting to some extent, but it's, do you want more shooting in the form of Eric Gordon? We know what he can do in terms of spacing the floor. Or do you want more size in Daniel House, more athleticism, to get you back closer to that formula, at least rebounding-wise, that you were at 2 years ago?
See, I think that the decision to start House over Gordon, obviously, for all the reasons that you just listed off, there's benefits to his size, his athleticism, kind of getting back to the rebounding prowess that they were at in the 65-win season. But an aspect of it that I haven't really seen talked about yet is coming off the bench, especially coming off the bench as, you know, that sixth man type, you know, offensive, you know, lightning in a bottle, just come in, ignite the offense. Maybe, you know, the starters are having a down game, you know, you're behind and you need that spark off the bench right away. There's an art to that. And Eric Gordon has spoken about that before, how when he comes off the bench now, how he wasn't really, and maybe I'm remembering this incorrectly, but when he first came to Houston, he had to be kind of talked into the idea of being a sixth man. And he spoke, I believe, about how it took him some time to sit on the bench and learn how to approach the game differently. But now that he kind of sees how to approach the game from a sixth man point of view, he sees the game starting out from the bench. He can kind of see what the opposing defense is doing, what kind of looks he can generate for himself and for his teammates. And again, that there's an art to that, and he's good at that. He's been in Sixth Man of the Year discussions for two of the past three seasons, and the only reason he wasn't really in the discussion last year was because he was a starter. So if D'Antoni's willing to give House the starting spot and then have that set of guards coming off the bench in Austin Rivers and Eric Gordon, I personally feel like the Rockets will be at their deadliest with that dynamic, because really the Rockets have four players that you can really just give the ball to and say, make something happen, whether that be create a shot for someone else or generate points for yourself. And those are obviously Westbrook, Harden, Rivers, and Gordon. So staggering those four players, two in the starting lineup, two coming off the bench, I feel is the best way to go about staggering minutes across the, you know, 8 or 9 man rotation.
I think that's a fair point. And yeah, when you listen to D'Antoni, the first thing he referenced in his answer about the defensive rebounding, going back to the size of Trevor Ariza relative to Eric Gordon, who started the majority of this past year, I thought that was pretty telling. So even though a couple of days ago, Ali Bajani wrote an article, a really good one, a Westbrook film study in The Athletic, saying that Gordon was a likely starter, floor spacing with Russell Westbrook, I think he's probably right about that. But then when you listen to D'Antoni explain it, it certainly seems like down the road they're open to House. And maybe it's just a matter of coming off, he's so young, and a subpar playoff run. I know he did have the foot injury in there. Maybe they just want him to earn it before they officially turn it over. But I think we agree, long term, I'd be a little surprised if Gordon isn't back in his six-man role once we get closer to the postseason. Another interesting angle from that D'Antoni interview with Craig Ackerman, towards the very end, Craig asked the question that has to be asked, which is about D'Antoni's future. We know on-again, off-again talks this summer about a contract extension. He's going into the last year of the four-year contract he signed in 2016. To this point, there's no agreement, and it looks like he's going to enter the season as a lame duck coach. That's the unofficial term. Now, in reality, the Rockets say they'll handle it once the season is over. But Craig asked Mike D'Antoni if he expected it to be a distraction. He said not at all. This is one, I know that's something that every coach has to say, the team is going to downplay it, but I honestly think this is true. I don't see it as a distraction for the Rockets, because quite frankly, I don't know where Mike D'Antoni would go after this season. This is a guy who's going to be 69 years old after this year. That's not a nice age as it pertains to NBA coaching. And there's only about 7 or 8 teams in the league where he would make sense at his age, because you know within 2 or 3 years he would like to retire. And if you're a rebuilding team, why would you hire someone at 69 who, just when your team is finally getting to a contender's spot in an ideal world, you have to let go? So as far as the Rockets are concerned, I know that D'Antoni's agent's trying to get the best deal that he can, but honestly, I don't see this. I think that's why the Rockets are willing to go in without an extension. I just don't see a scenario where if the Rockets go out and have a good year, that they can't retain D'Antoni. So that's why in this particular case, I just don't know how many outside options he has. Again, the few contenders that would make sense for 69-year-old D'Antoni, I don't think they would have a head coaching vacancy. So I don't see it as that much of a distraction, just because I don't know where he would reasonably go, even if there were some contentious negotiations over salary or whatever it may be. Is that a fair outlook?
I think that is a fair outlook, but I want to throw you this from the other angle. We did just have a team who fired their longtime head coach, Dwayne Casey, and hire a coach, Nick Nurse, and then go on to win the NBA championship.
That is interesting. And I guess I could see it from that angle more so. Like, I honestly think that it's D'Antoni that's more at risk than the Rockets are. Because if for some reason something goes wrong, then the Rockets not having any long-term money committed to D'Antoni, it would be very easy for them to, you know, pull a Cavaliers and David Blatt a few years ago, that kind of scenario where they pivoted to Tyronn Lue midseason. I'm not endorsing that, but I guess to me, that's the side. I guess where I'm going with that, it's not so much that there's zero distraction, but I guess it feels like it's something that's within the Rockets organizationally, their control. In that I don't know that D'Antoni after the year would really have that much of a market to go to. With that said, I guess the one angle where you do have to keep it in the back of your mind is that should things go haywire for any reason, then there's no long-term security for D'Antoni, and that makes it very easy for the Rockets to go a different direction, as you said, with the whole Raptors and Nick Nurse thing.
Definitely. And I mean, it kind of, while D'Antoni does have to say the things that he's been saying, it's not going to be an issue. You've got to imagine it is on the back of his mind, but D'Antoni seems like a consummate professional. I don't think he's going to come in and mail it in or do a poor job coaching just because he doesn't have an extension. I feel like you feel the same way, would love to see D'Antoni retire, you know, as the Houston Rockets coach without having coached another team.
Yeah.
And ideally, we'd like to see him retire with a championship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was digging up some numbers for my story at Rockets Wire, and one thing I didn't realize, I knew that D'Antoni, his winning percentage in the regular season over 3 years in Houston is over 70%, which is by far the best in Rockets franchise history. Even though he hasn't won a title, he also has the best winning percentage in postseason games in Rockets franchise history. So clearly, of course, he gets a lot of respect offensively. He was the coach of the year a couple of years ago, but clearly he's a very good overall coach. I hope this works out. Another item that I want to get to very quickly on the subject of guys that suddenly, I think we all hope, retire in Houston. Somehow you might can add, even at 27 years old, Austin Rivers to that list. You might have seen earlier today, there was a podcast he did with Ben Baller in which he talked about Houston being the most fun destination that he has been at, the most fun team anywhere in his NBA career. He went on to talk about why he loved the city, he loved the fans. He said this has been amazing for him. And of course, he showed it, turning down offers, mid-level exception range, to stay for the minimum earlier this summer. And of course, the Rockets will have early bird next summer. Hopefully, they can knock out a long-term deal. It feels like Rivers should be older than 27, but I think it's because he's just been on such a high profile, really, ever since he was 18, 19, whatever it was, at Duke. Anyway, Jackson, just looking back to this time a year ago, this is what I'm struck by. Imagine 12 months ago, if someone had told you that, number one, the co-star of the Rockets alongside James Harden would be Russell Westbrook, and then secondly, right up there with Gerald Green, the most beloved role player Rocket would be Austin Rivers. How freaking crazy is this?
I mean, you got to really admit it. It's absolutely insane. I would have said, what episode of Black Mirror are we watching? I mean, you know, when you think about how, and Matt Thomas, you know, in his interview with Russell Westbrook recently, he said to Russell, he said, you know, we're supposed to hate you, you know, yeah. And it's so strange to think that now, you know, in what, let's say, you know, almost less than 2 months, month and a half from now, Russell Westbrook's going to be suiting up in Rockets red alongside Austin Rivers.
Yep.
And if you put them side by side, I don't know which situation's crazier. Probably the Westbrook one, because he's, you know, the bigger name, the star. But at the same time, Austin Rivers, I remember last season when he was waived and he became a free agent, and it was right at the exact same time that Chris Paul re-aggravated that hamstring. I apologize. Maybe it wasn't a re-aggravation of the same hamstring from the Western Conference Finals.
No, but it was a re-aggravation from about 3 weeks before that.
Exactly. There we go. And so Chris Paul was going to be out for a number of games, and the Rockets were very thin at the guard spot. And I went around talking about it, and I said, I feel like they're going to pick up Austin Rivers. He's going to be the safety valve. Sure enough, they signed him. And the few media members that I did speak to about it back when it originally happened, I won't name names, they all said it was a desperate signing. And I didn't view it that way. I kind of thought it, and I just said, you know, it's been a long time since the Rockets have had some players with, you know, some fight to them, some edge. You know, I love that that's what P.J. Tucker brings every night, Gerald Green, Daniel House a little bit. They bring some of that attitude. And now you add last season, you add Austin Rivers to that mix, somebody who's got a little, you know, some fire to him. And then now probably the fieriest guy in the entire NBA, Russell Westbrook, is helping to spearhead the attack as well.
Final thoughts here with Jackson Gatlin, 790 producer. You can follow him on Twitter at JTGatlin790. This is Locked on Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. On this Friday, September 13th, we're just basically going through the latest news and rumors surrounding the Rockets, calling it a Friday roundtable. And in this closing segment, the third of our usual three, just going to try and go quick hitting style on a few items. I'll start with a move that actually on this show I have not talked that much about. The sidestep three fading away off one leg that we've all seen from James Harden this summer. when he mentioned to a group of kids in July that he was working on a new move for this season, James Harden, the 2018 MVP runner-up this past year, ridiculous as that was, in my opinion, coming off a 36-plus points per game season, we knew that he was working on a new move. He often does that. But as far as the one-legged three, it looks so ridiculous and so difficult to pull off that I thought, okay, this is neat, but this is mostly for fun. This is for social media, some videos. He's done a hashtag one-leg challenge. There's no way that this is real. But over the past 6 weeks, there's been enough evidence of this. You know, the workouts with the Rockets team-wide in Los Angeles this past week, Westbrook, Harden, PJ Tucker. I don't think Westbrook and Tucker played in the games, but they've all been up there. A lot of NBA players in New York for Fashion Week. Harden going up against a bunch of others, including Danny Green, a really good defender. And on the video of the highlights, what is it? It's James Harden busting out that same move, the three off one leg. At this point, I still don't know how efficient it's going to be in real games. Time will tell. But I have a tough time seeing it not be legitimate at this stage. There's just too much evidence. I don't know how well it will work in the season, but at this point, based on what we've seen this offseason, I think at least in the preseason, it's going to be something crazy as it sounds, and it's something that, I mean, it could literally break the NBA. It is that ridiculous if he can somehow be efficient with it. But at this point, I'm buying that he's at least going to try it. Are you buying it?
I'm definitely buying it, and I think that there's probably much better people than myself to, you know, ideally help analyze this move. But one of the things that I've noticed when I see it is, at least last year, you know, when Harden started perfecting the step back and really making it part of his repertoire, is to me, it always looks like he's more comfortable doing the step back going to his right. I could be wrong saying that, and I don't have the stats in front of me to back up this assumption, but I'm just going off the eye test. Is he looks more comfortable doing the step back going to his right, and something tells me that this one-legged, you know, the one-legged shot going to his left is going to be when he's going to be using it more often. Something about using your dominant leg going that direction makes me think that this is going to be his safety valve when going left, or when defenses trip up and give him a path to go to his left, that'll be his go-to. Whereas when he's being funneled right, he'll probably stick to the traditional step back that we've all come to know and love.
Very interesting. I could see that. That kind of matches the eye test with what I saw as well. Next item. We heard from Ali Bajani a few days ago that there's another Rocket, former Rocket, beyond Terrence Jones, that could be joining the team at least for training camp. To this point, it has not happened yet, but the three names that we know are out there looking for employment that are, at least a year ago were in the league in some fashion, Corey Brewer, Luke Bamute, Ryan Anderson. Of those three, who do you see as the most likely? I'll go quickly. I first wondered about Brewer because he's been warming up at Toyota Center. We know he's done some workouts in Houston. He still lives here. D'Antoni, as he did a year ago, posted the picture with Brewer. But number one, he did that a year ago and didn't sign in. And then secondly, we heard from Clutch fans, Dave Hardesty, that the Rockets, at least a couple of days ago, did not have the intent of bringing in Brewer. Luke Bamute obviously had success a year ago, but as I said on my podcast earlier in the week, I'm a little skeptical at this point, either medically or the role he's expecting. Something is off for him not to have a job at this stage, and so I don't know if he's ready to take the prove-it type deal. I'm buying into Ryan Anderson as at least a possibility. Now, I'm sure other teams could as well, but he's 31 years old, so he's not that old. At this point, he's not burdened by the major contract anymore, which obviously was a part in his big decline, I think, the expectations in Houston. Certainly, he's not the athlete he was earlier in his career, but he shouldn't be over the hill at 31. We know Daryl Morey has said that the Rockets are prioritizing shooting bigs around Russell Westbrook. You need to space the floor even more so that he can drive and not be stuck out there as a shooter. So of those three, if there's a Rockets reunion, I've talked myself into Ryan Anderson being the most likely. Of those three, do you have a favorite, or is there someone else that I didn't even think of that might be that hypothetical reunion guy?
Well, I'll tell you what, the way that he's playing in the World Cup, they might want to go ahead and give Luis Scola a
call. Ooh, good point.
No, but on a more serious note, I think if we could, and the problem with this is you can't just table health discussions. Obviously, they're real. You have to take them into consideration. My personal favorite would be bringing back Luke. I think that something that was sorely missed last year was that ability to have wings who were just interchangeable. There were times in the 17-18 season when on a single play, you might have Trevor Ariza, Luke, and PJ CJ all take turns guarding the same guy. Now, those three players rarely shared the floor together, but it was nice to always have at least two of those three guys on the court at, during stretches where you really needed to bolster your defense. Now, I think that I'm in agreement with you. I think Ryan Anderson is probably the likely candidate that comes back, and that is in part to what you've been saying about Luke's health, and there's probably something else there with the physical aspect of it that maybe we don't know about yet, that the general public doesn't know yet, that, you know, it's the knee injury is more severe, or there's maybe still some, you know, lingering issues with the shoulder that are of some concern. But I can see Ryan Anderson getting some burn in the regular season. I don't see him cracking the rotation come playoff time, but for a serviceable big who can stretch the floor and really give Westbrook and Harden more space to operate, I'd be all for Ryan Anderson having a return trip to Houston.
Last item, we heard last week from Kevin Durant that he views the toughest one-on-one defender for him in the league being PJ Tucker. Now, that's not quite the same as saying he's the best one-on-one defender in the league, because clearly, you know, the guy who's best suited to guard Kevin Durant, when healthy, of course, may not be the same as the guy best suited to guard, I don't know, Steph Curry or James Harden. Obviously, there's going to be some position variance, but clearly PJ's up there. The big question with PJ before training camp, will there be an extension? I could go either way on this. I think the Rockets want to reward him, and I hope maybe worst case you can fully guarantee the last year of his deal, which at this point is only partially guaranteed for the 2020-2021 season. But unlike Eric Gordon, where there was so much roster uncertainty going into the last year of his contract, and, you know, if you lose him for nothing, that would be really bad. Tucker, number one, he's older at 34, so I don't know how much longer the Rockets are truly counting on him anyway beyond the next couple of years. And then secondly, because he's under team control for two more years, I just don't know, even though, of course, we all love PJ, Kevin Durant calls him the league's best one-on-one defender for a reason, there's just not the same sense of urgency between the Rockets and Tucker that I think there was between the Rockets and Gordon. So what's your gut feel before preseason? Is there a deal between the Rockets and PJ Tucker, or do they just play it out the way it is?
I kind of see them playing it out the way it is. I mean, it took until going into the final year of Gordon's deal to come to a conclusion on an extension for him. Obviously, we know about the Mike D'Antoni situation right now. I don't see a reason for them to, you know, quote-unquote lock down PJ Tucker anytime soon. So, you know, while I'd love to see PJ, you know, he's one of those guys that's turned into a fan favorite. Obviously, you know, Rockets fans were ecstatic about him embracing the concept of the Tuck Wagon lineup last year. So it'd be great to see him retire in Houston. He's been an integral part of the team for a couple of years now, but I don't see him getting an extension done anytime soon.
Yeah, I'd be a little surprised. I think you could see kind of a partial extension, meaning make that final year fully guaranteed. I think at this point he's earned that. I think it'd be a fair compromise. But as far as beyond that, I just don't know that there's the sense of urgency to force a deal, especially with so many other things, including the D'Antoni situation. We'll see what happens with Nene and Shumpert. A lot more things on the front burner than PJ Tucker, a 34-year-old PJ Tucker at this stage. So maybe there's a compromise. You guarantee that last year. But I think I'm in agreement. There's no real need to make that deal go into his age 37 or age 38 type seasons. They can play this out at least until next summer. Folks, he is Jackson Gatlin. Jackson, thank you so much for the time. For those interested in learning more about him, you can follow him on Twitter at JTGatlin790. Anywhere else that you want to toss out as far as plugs?
Not really, you know, just right there. And then I am the weekend producer, so anytime you guys want to tune in to 790, give us a listen. I'm on the Doug Pike Show, the Sports RV Show, both on Saturdays, and then Doug Pike again on Sunday, and then Clutch City Sunday also on Sunday.
Sounds good. Look forward to hearing your work. And yeah, I tune in to Sports RV on the weekends and Clutch City Sunday regularly. So of course, you're doing great work there. Jackson, thanks so much for joining the show for the first time, and look forward to having you back on again in the future.
Thanks a bunch, Ben. I appreciate it.
Great stuff there with Jackson Gatlin, and that's where I will break things on this Friday afternoon, September 13th. As always, I thank you guys so much for tuning in, and if you want more content before the next show, well, the best place this time of year, because we're not a daily show now that we still are in the off-season, at least for a couple more weeks, it'll be semi-slow. But if you want more content before our next episodes, of course, Twitter is the best way to get it. Jackson's on there at JTGatlin790. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. And the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Beyond that, we've got a website, LockedOnRockets.com, a Facebook account, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. all of those ways you can access prior content. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to improve the experience for you as a Rockets fan, or even just you as a human being. Also, if you haven't subscribed to the show already, please do. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya. Odds are, wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find Locked On Rockets because we're part of a great network of shows at the Locked On Podcast Network. So subscribe, leave 5-star reviews. That's how you'll get the benefit of episodes even before I can post them to my aforementioned Twitter timelines. And hopefully by leaving a 5-star review and certainly with your subscription, we can look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So for Jackson Gatlin, I'm Ben Dubose. Thanks to all of you so much for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.